Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
I'm Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. One of the hidden gems of the Baltimore Catholic school system is St. Francis of Assisi School in a neighborhood in northeast Baltimore called Mayfield. The school has long been an outstanding school with a myriad of academic offerings, and recently learned that it has received a coveted designation that will make it an even greater destination for students throughout the Baltimore area. Here to share this exciting news is Mary Carol Ladinsky. Thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
So, without further ado, what is the announcement, and what is this program that you're going to be having?
We just recently learned that we're going to be approved as an International Baccalaureate World School at our middle school level. And International Baccalaureate, or IB, is a nonprofit educational foundation which offers high-level coursework throughout the whole world. It encourages our students to develop their intellectual, personal, emotional, and social skills so they can live, learn, and work in a rapidly globalizing world. The middle school program has a challenging framework that encourages our students to make practical connections between their studies and the real world. And we're the first non-public school in Baltimore City to offer this program. We're also the first middle school in the Archdiocese to offer the IB program. Archbishop Spalding High School has it at their high school level. There are over 4,000 schools in the world that are accredited IB schools. The program has name recognition throughout the world, especially in D.C. There are several IB schools that offer instruction to the diplomatic community as well as to local students.
So for the average parent listening to this and then wondering what it means on a practical basis in terms of what the classroom experience will be like for their child, can you talk a little bit about how IB changes a traditional classroom setting?
I think they'll be impressed by the fact that our program is very rigorous. It's also inclusive. Every child is part of this program. It's not an exclusionary program. It also has a strong focus on incorporating instruction in second language, in the arts, in technology, and in PE. The students especially like the PE because we offer two periods of PE a week rather than just the one. The students and the teachers also are encouraged to be reflective, so the parents will notice the students doing a lot more of writing that incorporates reflecting on what they're learning, and not just what they're learning, but also how they're learning. They'll also notice that there's a lot more project-based learning going on in the classroom. It's very hands-on. There are many real-world links, lots more writing, both formally and informally. And there are a lot of strong connections between one subject and another. For example, in our sixth grade class, the students in math were learning about angles. And at the same time, their art teacher did a lesson with them on abstract artists such as Kandinsky and Picasso. And the students then culminated with a summative assessment where they developed their own piece of artwork that mimicked some of the work that they saw in Picasso and Kandinsky. And they wrote about the message they were trying to put across through that abstract work and also used mathematical language in explaining how they developed their piece of work.
So this is a pretty advanced curriculum. But as you said, it's inclusionary. This isn't just for gifted and talented children.
Yes, the IB has policies that we are mandated to follow, and one of those is a special needs policy. So we spell out just how we're going to adjust our curriculum so that it is a program that's accessible to all our students.
Which I would think has to set it apart from a lot of other advanced programs, which are for children who are advanced in terms of their ability to learn.
Yes, and I think that's one thing that's different with the middle years program. The high schools have the diploma program, the DP program, which is more exclusionary, but this is mandated to be an inclusionary program. As a matter of fact, when I had some of the professional development training, there were schools there that were level six special education schools, totally special education, that were adopting the IB curriculum within their school.
So this is going to be available to students in sixth, seventh, and eighth grades?
That's right.
Beginning this fall?
That's right.
Great. So I would imagine that it took quite a bit of doing just to prepare the application and go through the process.
It was a very intensive.
And you're smiling and nodding because you were the one probably to do that. So can you speak a little bit about that and what they were looking for?
Yes, it was an intensive three-year process. We started with a feasibility study, and then we spent the next year or so as a candidate school. And they were looking for us to develop units of instruction that went beyond and deepened the curriculum. It's not a separate curriculum. We use the archdiocesan curriculum itself, but then we deepen that to help the students make connections between key concepts and also learn within a global context, that the learning is more meaningful for the students. So when the visiting team came for their verification visit this past May, they're looking to see if we had developed those units, that we were incorporating some of the strong points of the IB program and the way we developed those units with the students and developing their thinking skills, teaching the whole child, helping them to make connections constantly between the unit of study to the whole world.
And is this going to challenge how the teachers prepare for the new school year? I would imagine that
it is.
Know.
It's very challenging. We started right from the very beginning back as a candidate school writing units of study. And so we had to take the archdiocesan curriculum and then broaden that by as we wrote those units of study for the IB. We developed certain inquiry questions that looked at what they're learning on different levels, not just factual but also inferential. And also we looked at debatable questions that helped the students to go beyond the work and apply to the real world. So they were looking for that development of those units when they came to visit the school. They were looking for the fact that students are developing what we call learner profile traits, where they look at themselves as learners and are developing themselves in many areas, that they're going beyond just, you know, sitting at a desk and working on a unit of instruction.
The school, can you give us just a little bit of a sense for those who are unfamiliar with the school? Where is it located? Roughly the size and any of the other programmatic offerings that the school has?
We're beginning our 60th anniversary year in the fall, so we've been around for almost 60 years now. We have 250 students. Our average class size is between 18 and 21. And besides being in that area of Mayfield and Lauraville, we're also right alongside Herringbone Park. So that's a great program,
bonus.
A bonus for us, because we have a monarch butterfly garden on our grounds, but we can also use the park for our athletic activities. In addition to the MYP or IB program, we have a one-on-one iPad program in our middle school. And that enables the students to much more easily do the research and inquiry that the IB demands of them, and also to design the units that they're working on. We offer STEM programs within the school. We actually have several 3D printers that we've begun to use with the students. We also have a junior grade books curriculum in our lower grades, which helps the students to develop their inquiry thinking as they're developing their reading skills. Our math program is a Singapore math program. And also, at our pre-K through second grade level, we offer Catechesis of the Good Shepherd. And that's a Montessori-based religious education program that makes their religious education more hands-on and clear to them.
So, touching on that, how does the school envision kind of marrying the IB curriculum with the Catholic education piece of it?
We found it to be a perfect fit.
It seems like it would be.
Our patron saint is St. Francis, so there's a strong emphasis already on the environment and on peacemaking. We have a strong identity with our Pope Francis. We're locally rooted as a Catholic parish school, but we also strongly believe in the Pope's example of service and social justice, so that for us, this program is a natural progression to take it even further.
And I would imagine that the Pope's recent encyclical probably has the wheels turning about how the school can, you know, carry forth the challenge and the mandate of the Pope and how it intersects with IB. It just seems like there are lots of opportunities there.
Definitely. And there's a strong emphasis on service throughout this whole curriculum. With every unit, we encourage the students to think about how they could apply what they're learning to service, so that goes right in with the Pope's encyclical, what we can do to be stewards of the environment.
And Catholic social teaching.
Exactly.
Obviously. So a lot that seems like a perfect fit within any Catholic school environment.
Yes.
So, how can people learn more about the IB program? How can people learn more about St. Francis of Assisi?
They can visit our website. It's www.sfa-school.org, and then look under the link called Academics, and you'll find information about the school itself as well as the IB.
So the International Baccalaureate program at St. Francis of Assisi begins this fall in the middle school grades. Encourage everyone to check it out. It's a great school that just got a little bit better. So Mary Carol Ladinsky, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. Have you heard of Jim Gaffigan yet? The burly comic is known for his clean yet hysterical humor, as well as his respect for the Catholic faith. Gaffigan, who is Catholic, is coming to Baltimore August 11th, and you can also see him in the Jim Gaffigan Show, airing on TV Land. Visit CatholicReview.org to learn more about Gaffigan and how he manages to combine faith and comedy in his show, in which his Catholicism often figures prominently. For a snapshot of a local person living her Catholic faith, visit CatholicReview.org for our interview with Meg Protzman, who just returned from Catholic Heart Work Camp. Protzman, who graduated from McDaniel College in May, led groups of high school students in service projects across the USA, from Memphis, Tennessee to Ashland, Montana. As a high school student at Mount DeSales Academy in Catonsville, Protzman spent 4 summers on Catholic Heart Work Camp. Thanks to her servant's mindset, she enjoyed it so much that she returned this year as a staff member. On the theme of missionary service, Pope Francis' announcement that he will canonize Blessed Junipero Serra during his upcoming trip to the U.S. has prompted some discussion. At CatholicReview.org, Father Michael Perry, head of today's Franciscan Order, discusses the 18th century Franciscan missionaries' evangelization of the indigenous people of what is now California. Want these stories and more delivered directly to your inbox? Text CR News to 22828 or email mail@catholicreview.org to sign up for our e-newsletter. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is Eric Zygmunt.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice a week updates. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. Again, online, that's CatholicReview.org.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
The season of sacraments is nearly here. First Holy Communion, Confirmation, and weddings. Visit the Baltimore Basilica, America's first cathedral, and stop by the gift shop for all of your gift needs. From beautiful frames to crucifixes and crosses, statues and one-of-a-kind rosaries, the Basilica Gift Shop has it all. Friendly, knowledgeable staff members can help you select the perfect gift. Also available, Baltimore's very own Mouth Party Caramels, locally designed hand-painted signs and jewelry, plus gifts for Easter as well as an extensive line of St. Patrick's Day items sure to bring out the Irish in everyone. Visit the Basilica Gift Shop at 409 Cathedral Street in Baltimore or call 410-727-3565 for hours and directions. Free street parking available directly in front of the Basilica between 9:30 and 4 p.m.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Grand to be here.
What do we know about the fifth Archbishop of Baltimore, Samuel Eccleston?
Very interesting character. He was a convert, born in the Upper Eastern Shore in Kent County. Came to St. Mary's in Baltimore, which was also a lay college at that time, for his education, and there found his vocation as well. Joined the Sulpician Fathers, and was a member, if you will, the more progressive wing, the more Americanizing wing of the Sulpicians at that time.
And what was his relationship, if any, to Archbishop Whitfield? How did he become the selection, if you will?
Mm-hmm. Right. Remember, of course, there's not exactly a huge cadre of priests at this time. So the priests in Baltimore were very well known to each other. And the Sulpicians were often the advisors and the pariti, if you will, to the Archbishop's office. He'd call upon these men for input and scholarly research.
And what was the position of the church in the United States at that time in terms of, you know, how it was perceived and what, if any, influence it had in terms of secular issues and certainly as immigration expanded, what was
Surely.
The church called on to do?
Surely. Things were getting rough for the church in these days. There had been the rise of nativism beginning in 1829 and just getting more ferocious, really, up until the Civil War. We think of the great incidences in Boston and in New York, convent burnings and riots and the like, Philadelphia as well. Baltimore didn't suffer quite so much, probably because Baltimore had a well-established and respected Catholic population. But Eccleston did have those problems to deal with as well.
And he served during his 17-year episcopacy at a time when especially Irish immigrants were coming to this country en masse, and Baltimore was a large port of entry. How did he deal with that?
Right. It's interesting that very often it was the older, more American bishops who were more aware of the problems of the immigrants. It's rather ironic. So he was someone who was interested in establishing parishes where they had Irish priests, parishes where they had German priests, and seeing these people were served in their native language and according to the customs of their particular practice of the faith.
Mm-hmm. When he is at 34, he was relatively young to become an archbishop, especially when he didn't convert to Catholicism until the age of 18. That's a pretty astounding fact, it seems to me.
Absolutely.
That would be a big challenge in terms of how he would approach his position. He presided over several provincial councils in his time as archbishop. Do we know what became of them? The Blessed Virgin Mary was named patroness of the United States during that time. Were
right.
there any other takeaways?
No, it was much more of the disciplinary actions. There was very little doctrinal things that were done. It was always about where the money was to go and what money was to go to the Holy See, what money was to go to the diocese, and particularly for the mission efforts.
Mm-hmm. When you look at how the diocese would have operated then compared to today, obviously it wasn't as large in scope administratively.
Mm-hmm.
How did it support parishes at that time? Was it at all relied upon? You know, how did parishes view its role with the diocese or its relationship?
Right. That's an interesting question. I think they never sought fiscal support from the diocese. They knew that the diocese wasn't that much better off than they were. So there was more independence in the financial matters of the various parishes. The whole question of where you get your money from was an interesting one because in Europe, the churches had either been run by the religious orders that paid for it or they were supported by the government. Here, there had to be a new way of supporting church. And it was voluntarism, that you had that you took up a collection, that you paid pew rent, that you had seed offerings, things that continued really in some places well into the 20th century. So it was a challenge indeed. Now, many of the parishes were still run by religious orders. the Jesuits, the Redemptorists had come, and some other congregations.
Mm. It seems that he was a pretty visionary man in terms of recognizing current and future challenges and taking unique approaches to them. It's reported that he founded, or at least during his time, St. Charles Minor Seminary began under his reign. What do we know about St. Charles?
Well, that was a gift of Charles Carroll of Carrollton, and he, who had been the richest man in colonial America, and he gave land adjacent to his estate in Howard County across the Frederick Pike from his own property, and the first minor seminary in the country was built there, St. Charles College, and stayed there until the early 20th century when it burned down and was moved into Catonsville and Maiden Choice Lane.
Mm-hmm. He was reportedly a gifted preacher. Do we know anything about his style, not either as a preacher or just his leadership style in general?
Right. Because he was a young man, he had a very vital kind of tenure. He was very loving. He was injured in an accident a few years before his death, and he lost a lot of that vitality after that stagecoach accident. But in his early years, he was really a house of fire. And again, he was very interested in the educational apostolate. He saw that many more schools were founded, and he was very hands-on.
The administrative duties of being a metropolitan archbishop, apparently that of naming new bishops, were among the things he wasn't crazy about doing. Does that speak to his provincialism? Was he more concerned with, you know, those issues that were in his backyard, or was it just new to him, or maybe mm-hmm. a combination of things?
I don't know that he was interested in the Roman politics that lead to who gets appointed where as a bishop. He was very much the American.
Mm-hmm. In terms of how he viewed his true position and
right.
what his role
right.
was. Tell me more about the accident. What do we know about where that occurred? Do we know where it occurred?
Out on the mission, I think he was either going or coming back from one of the missions.
Right. And the stagecoach was somehow...
Right. Tossed over, and he was injured as the coach went over.
And that would eventually lead to his decline
yes.
in health?
It's a decline in health, right.
And ultimately his death.
Right. He wasn't an old man when he died.
No. At 34, he served 17 years, right. Would have been just in his early 50s.
Right. Exactly.
As I mentioned, he's reportedly seen as a visionary, and one of the issues he would have had to deal with was how to minister to a growing black Catholic community.
Right. If he had a blind spot, I'm afraid his blind spot was in the interracial apostolate. The Oblate Sisters of Providence, the original black congregation of sisters, was having a hard time. And when the question was referred to him, he said, cui bono, to whose good is this? And he suggested that perhaps they disperse and go into the homes of the Catholic gentry as maidservants. Hmm. So he wasn't particularly enlightened on the racial question, which may have been a reflection of his Eastern Shore culture.
Certainly. And so with that not being the final word, how should history remember Samuel Eccleston as the fifth Archbishop of Baltimore?
Right. He was a doer. He got a lot done in his early years, especially, and he brought a vitality to the archdiocese. Whitfield was grand, but Whitfield was old. But Eccleston was full of youthful energy.
And up until that point, other than John Carroll, had served the longest in the position.
Right, exactly.
That's Father Michael Roach speaking about the episcopacy of Samuel Eccleston, 5th Archbishop of Baltimore.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
Are you interested in joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore and Catholic Review Media on a bus pilgrimage to the Papal Mass in Philadelphia, September 27th? Pope Francis is expected to celebrate an outdoor Mass along Philadelphia's famed Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It will be a huge crowd and a great way to celebrate our faith together with hundreds of thousands of fellow Catholics, even if the Pope is just a tiny dot from your vantage point, or you can only see him on a video screen. You will want to join what will probably be the largest gathering of Catholics in the USA this year. For more information about the September 27th pilgrimage to the Papal Mass, visit tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus. That's tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus or call 443-524-3150. 443-524-3150. See you in Philly.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.